good afternoon, and good evening to all of our listeners all over the world. I'm Barry Miller, your host of the RevAmp podcast. Today, I have Perry Nalbeka, the CEO and co-founder of Penguin Strategies, an agency that is well-known in the Israel community and beyond. I have friends that have worked there and have talked about how amazing it is, and I've talked to customers that have used them, and they all love Perry, and they all love the company.
Thanks. Thanks for having me and looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So Perry, maybe you could tell us a bit more about your agency before we take a deep dive.
Oh, sure. I think it starts, you know, me and my co-founders, we come from the startup high tech ecosystem of more than 20 years. Don't want to date myself too much. But after having pretty much played in every role possible in the system, starting from developer through biz dev, product, sales. I decided to start a consultancy in 2013, which ended up becoming Penguin Strategies in 2014, where we basically provided two or three types of services to begin with, which was two services that at the time weren't really being delivered in one place, which is content and marketing technology, which today is probably more fall into RevOps, but at the time it was, and we were the first HubSpot agency in Israel, so we were representing them in the Israeli ecosystem, and we've kind of focused on the B2B tech company in general, and then very quickly, we found that there was a lot of need for what we were providing. We started getting leads from all over the world, which led us to start a small, which ended up growing a little bit, US-based subsidiary. And just to kind of accelerate over the years, we kind of started adding more services to help provide a really well-rounded 360-degree service set to our niche customers, which are B2B tech companies. And so we've added more and more services. I won't talk about the marketing digital agency services, but I kind of over the last 2-3 years, we've kind of doubled down and we've been calling it along with the other vendors RevOps for over 2 or 3 years, but I think it's finally catching on. And leading up to about a year ago when we acquired a Salesforce agency, and so that we could provide kind of a not only a 360 service in general, but very also within the RevOps, HubSpot and Salesforce probably accounting for 99% of, the main CRM and marketing automation vendors.
Yeah, no, awesome. Well, congrats on the expansion. And so let's talk about Salesforce, HubSpot. I think that's an interesting thing for our listeners. We were just even discussing that you could use Salesforce and you could use HubSpot. Some people that use Salesforce hate HubSpot. Some people that use HubSpot hate Salesforce. Is it a branding thing? Is it what people are used to? What's going on with HubSpot Salesforce these days?
I love that question. Let's put it into context that, as they say, as our grandmother would understand. Well, maybe our 6-year-old definitely would understand this. Take Android and iPhone. Got the same polarized, believers in each of them. You have people who don't care, but at the end of the day, they both can do everything. Everything you could imagine, that you would need in a phone, a listening device, whatever you use your phones for, they can both do it. So why does one buy than the other? It is a branding thing. It is a following. So the same thing can be said for Salesforce and HubSpot. Definitely today, maybe 2-3 years ago, it was different. But I think today, which especially since HubSpot has kind of matured their CRM and sales offering with their service offering and their new, all the new integrations that they provide. When you're talking about a tech company that wants to scale from, what they call Series A to unicorn, pretty much, there's certain use cases, of course, which we don't have to go into right now. You could use either one and be happy and get it done. And so it really comes down to the user it's a branding, right? So most of the marketers have become HubSpot groupies, right? Like the iPhoners. And then you got the sales teams are Salesforce groupies, right? Because they're I don't want to say that this guy's the iPhone, this is the Android, but that's kind of the way I see it. So a lot of times companies come to us and decide, you know, and ask, which one should we decide on? And it's really hard to help them because sometimes they come with they've already made the decision because in their mind they know what they want. But I think that's, you know, 80% of the selection criteria, it comes down to who's going to end up being the user, or, you know, or the, you know, what kind of history have they had, if they come with a clean slate or not. So it's that's kind of where things are.
All right. Absolutely. This could be a podcast now about just marketing and branding. So
go for it.
we'll filter it for that. So that's really interesting. Really cool. It shows you also, like, I think it was about 2 years ago that HubSpot started rolling out enterprise plans. So I guess, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you're a HubSpot expert versus me reading the news about HubSpot. But like 3 years ago or something like that, they started rolling out new enterprise plans so that they could focus more on those advanced features. And I guess those trickled down to some of their companies that are trying to get the unicorn status, some of those advanced features. Would that be a correct assessment of why they've improved so much in the past few years?
Yes. Yeah. So that is a critical statement you said there. The enterprise plans up to 3-4 years ago were just kind of a little bit better than the pro professional plans that they had. There was a huge differences. Go to 2 years ago. I think it was 2 years ago. That's when it started to make a huge difference. And so that companies that scaled above 10 salespeople, 100 salespeople, even, you know, more, could use the system. And there's a few of them. I think the most famous one, the biggest problem, like, that HubSpot would have had until that time is that, you know, everybody says, what's one of the advantages of HubSpot? It's the user experience, right? And I don't think we have to hide behind that. That's absolute a big advantage. But with the user experience being so good, came the inflexibility, right? Weren't able to do a lot of, you could add a field here or there. And what came with the new plans 2 years ago that made a huge, huge difference was custom objects. Once you could do custom objects, okay, there's other very important features that came with it, including permissioning and all kinds of other things that are really important. But that was like the big tidal wave of difference. You know, that now they could really compete in the CRM space, because that, you know, before that it was very hard to do channel marketing, channel sales, you know, different types of things that were just impossible. You could do workarounds, but you know when you wanted to scale, you don't want to work around for scaling.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Shameless plug, I guess, here. DealHub recognized also some of this trend some of HubSpot users are going upmarket, and that's one of the reasons why we focus on an integration with HubSpot, which helps both parties, right? The users, if they need an advanced CPQ, and us, because we have now more people that we can sell to, so that's also beneficial in technically business terms. So now we're talking about Salesforce versus HubSpot, but then there's also Salesforce and HubSpot, or HubSpot and Salesforce. Let's explore that. Do people use both platforms? Like, the sales use one platform and marketing use one platform, or the sales sometimes use sales HubSpot, like the free version, and then but they use the paid Salesforce version. What's going on over there?
All right. So, you know, I'm not going to use any, I'm not going to call this an official statistic, but just based on my experience of, if I look over the last 2 years, currently we work with somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 companies. Okay. And over the last 2 years, because we do some project-based work, we've probably done, you know, I'm talking on the RevOps side, there are probably 100, 150 different companies. On the exact number, but I would say, 60% of them, if not even a little bit more, between 60 and 70% of them are using Salesforce CRM and HubSpot marketing. Mm-hmm. And their integration is so native and so good that although there's, if any integration, you have issues, and that's a lot of times what we get called in to help fix them, but the integration is so good that they live very well one next to another.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I've actually heard even recently that sometimes maybe it's just one specific person, and which is you have 150, so excuse my sample size of one, that they were struggling that they were struggling a lot with Salesforce and HubSpot talking to each other. Is it that it just wasn't configured correctly and they need to use Penguin strategies, or what's going on over there?
It always comes down to configuration. I mean, one of the funny ones that I always, you know, that I always see is like, when there's a few things that are different in the way that HubSpot and Salesforce work, you know, specifically, for example, the way a lead is treated in Salesforce, where there's, you know, lead needs to be converted, where HubSpot treats them as a contact from day one. But where usually it falls down is sometimes it's little things. For example, you know, the dropdown. Right. So if let's say we're transferring a contact from one system to the other, and in the dropdown for country, one is USA and one is United States of America, boom. Yeah. Especially on a country that's like a country like that, you have all of a sudden you have a whole mess gets made up. Sometimes it creates duplicates. Sometimes what happens is the RevOps person unknowingly creates an extra field because they thought it wasn't going to work, whatever. Then the cleanup is very painful. So I mean, there's a lot of, because again, if you're an expert on one and you don't have the expertise on the other, sometimes that also causes the friction on the integration. So that's kind of where a lot of it breaks down. But ultimately, especially those two. I mean, we've done integrations into Microsoft Dynamics, to PipeDrive, into other CRMs, which are less, they can be integrated perfectly as well, but they're not as natively integrated as, because HubSpot and Salesforce have been integrated so many times that there's no reason for it not to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. I love that example of the country one. I think literally last week podcast recording, it would be last week, but I spoke to that about a person going global, or like, that was the example they gave, was the country is thinking, or they gave it by state, TX versus Texas. So it's sounds like this is a common denominator of abbreviations of states and countries.
Absolutely. There's many of the examples, but that's kind of the main one.
That's the secret to RevOps.
Over and over again. <That's> secret.
I think there should be like a RevOps board, like standards, best practices, do it United States of America, or do it just USA, and everyone else will be known as doing it wrong. And then you'll have, everyone will be on the same page. I invite you to run that.
If I can get HubSpot and Salesforce to listen to me, that would be great.
All right. I'll be your champion. We'll work on it together then.
Awesome.
Okay, cool. So the secret, so we learned a lot of important things just there. Let's talk about some of the, I guess, bringing the marketing leads to sales leads. I feel like if you guys are focused on RevOps and you have HubSpot and SalesOps, maybe you could talk about some of the other, not issues, but some of the patterns you see. It's rare that I get to speak to someone that's seen so many different types of companies and so many different situations. I think it would be really interesting to see some of the patterns and issues that people have when they're trying to bring marketing leads to sales leads, and some of the ways to fix them. I think that would be helpful because most people only see three companies, you know? So,
again, I like to give my examples. I think lots of, you know, one of the issues that you have is people they always ask, we want best practices, we want the trends. Basically what they're saying is we want to do what everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. And an example everybody has a little bit of a different meaning to MQL, SQL, in opportunity and when they move them from one to another. But I think that there's a big change happening, especially in the last couple of years, and most companies aren't there yet. What I mean by that is people really hate to be contacted when they shouldn't be contacted, and to most people, that's okay. Well, that means, you know, don't buy a list and spam it. And I think it extends to people that are just kicking tires, let them kick the tires rather than, you know, they download an ebook, you call them 20, you know, you put them into your, call them three times, send them two emails, SMS, WhatsApp, whatever the, your, everybody's got their secret formula. And really, you know, it, use more of a, depends on the type of product you have. I don't know, you know, not every company can do this, but they can do what's called like product-led sales, right? Where if you can let them try it, wait till they almost like, it's all, what I'm saying is it's almost time to let them beg for it before you want, almost going back to the olden days when if someone wanted to buy something, they had to actually walk into your store. And so, you know, that, and how do you, because at the end of the day, RevOps people just do what the, you know, with the salespeople, the market, we can make anything happen. We can automate every, you know, we can have this email automation, remind you to call, send us some, all these different things we can do automated. But at the end of the day, we want customers to buy. And I think that we're starting to miss the point with some of the, you know, some customers, and we can only, you know, can always, these are opinions that I'm having. And I know how you've seen it, but we fall kind of into that trap that let's do best practice. It's time to start looking at those best practices, and there are companies that are doing this. And I think those are the ones that are going to win in the next 5 years until everything changes again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that kind of like PLG, I think you called it product-led sales actually. That is, are you guys working a lot with those type of clients when they're doing RevOps? It's more of like helping even more on the product side so that people can see where they're trying out the product?
There definitely needs, yeah, whether you have to, because there has to be an integration into the touch points, right? So
right.
It's not just, you know, demo, but it's also, okay, you know, when they actually do a free trial or something like that. And then what triggers can we get from the system? Because this is a more, you know, using, there's so many APIs available to then create these packages that can automate over and above what we're doing today, not just mm-hmm. time based, but more trigger based.
Yep. Yeah. So let's talk about that. The specific tech stack, does HubSpot or Salesforce even have product analytics? Do you need to use like to get those triggers? Like I understand trials would be maybe something like, I guess, or you have to build a custom object for it, or do you need like something like a specific product type software to talk to HubSpot or Salesforce?
Yeah. So then, you know, we're moving into, you know, new territory, what we're talking about right now, because you're not going to get product analytics in your CRM, mm-hmm. but you can get the information into your CRM so that when the sales guy calls, he knows that there, you know, he not only knows that the trial started 30 days ago, but maybe that the guy didn't touch it for 30 days, or that they're logging 20 hours a day. Like you have to decide what you want to show up, and it can show up either, you know, using custom objects, using even a custom field. Like there's a lot of different options of how to do that. But that's, you know, you can take it even one level simpler. Like, okay. You know, I was talking with someone about this the other day, because HubSpot is such, you know, that we, because this was a HubSpot marketing implementation. This is one of the things that enterprise provides is trigger-based, you know, actions. What does that mean? Even, you know, what does that mean when I said before that someone comes in and begs for your product? If someone came to your certain pages on your website, that could be seen as that begging, right? I'm going to your pricing page. I'm clicking on all these areas. That's someone who's very interested. Okay, so you have to decide what to do with that. Do you call them? Do you send them an email? How do you do it so that you can keep moving? But the fact that you don't know that it happened, or there's no trigger for you to know that they came to that specific page, not just that they came to your website, but they came to a specific page. They're looking at your most pricey option on your of your product, and you're not getting a notification that begs to be, you know, to be fixed. And so there's so many different areas that we could optimize how we're doing sales, how we're doing marketing, and how we're interacting with our potential customers, or even with our existing customers who want to maybe be upsold to. That there's a lot left on the table for us to do, and I think that a lot of it's not being done because people don't know that it's possible.
Okay, cool. So I like that you brought it back simpler, because I did throw us into the product-led growth, but that idea of the just begging is the pricing page. And I guess that, and people don't know it's possible because it's a new feature by HubSpot or by Salesforce, or because just people, there's so much to do and they've never talked to CS HubSpot rep and because they're a salesperson or...
It's like any product, right? There's so many features people forget or they don't know. It's not even that new a feature. They've had it for quite a few years. And you know, there's different ways to use it. And I mean, people don't know that even their, how not everybody has a website that's, you know, that's on, let's say on a good CMS, but let's just say it's not. Your landing pages that you're using, and so if we're talking about HubSpot, if you're using HubSpot landing pages, I'll give you another feature that a lot of companies aren't realizing that they could use, is that they could have dynamic content. The dynamic content is not a new topic, but there's so few companies, you know, that they use it, whether on HubSpot or on WordPress or on any other platform they have. You know, there's basic ones, right? Like country. If someone comes from a certain country, it's not only about language, but how you present the information. You can have it connect, especially if it's a HubSpot landing page, to your database. So if you have been to my website 100 times and you're an SQL or whatever we want to define you, and you have a certain, then maybe I don't give you the regular language. I change the language. I'm not talking about the fields. Everybody knows that we have, you know, progressive profiling. Well, most people, they should know, right? I'm not going to ask you your first name again. I already know your first name. So let me ask for a new piece of information. That's, to me, if you don't know, if you're not doing that, then you have to go listen to the 101 podcast. But I'm talking about changing the language of the landing page so that it's different. And you imagine you could do it on your whole website. Anywhere on your website, you could change the language on your homepage, on your product page, based on where your customer is in the sales cycle, or, you know, where are they coming from? All kinds of different, That's so powerful and so simple for especially from a RevOps perspective to do that. You know, there's just so many companies. So why aren't more people doing it?
It's a great point. It's a big loss. You know the importance of it. Like, it makes sense. We've been talking about for the past 15 years, localize and talk to your user, personalize, and people.
And what do you get? You know, you get people's first name on an email, and that's that's the best they can do.
it's hard, but it's not hard. But then it's hard. The hard thing's not about easy things, I guess. That could be. Interesting. So then, so you guys, how do you guys as an agency remind yourself of those things? Meaning, you're so used to all these features. How do you remind yourself that they might not know these 101 features or that these 101 products?
Look, I understand. I talk as if it's like that. I just want to make everybody feel a little better. Even companies that we work with, and we know that they have these options, and we tell them, a lot of companies just aren't able to do it. They don't have the mind space to think of how to implement it, because this is the fact that it's available doesn't mean you have to come on what are the alternate landing pages look like, what are the words that we should use, how can we be more creative, and there's a lot to do, right, on the marketing teams, the copy teams. There's so much, so, you know, give ourselves a break. But at least, you know, hopefully the listeners at least know this is available so that they can advance. The hard part is keeping up with it and also helping convince our customers to do it so that they can get more value out of it. We stay in business by making our customers successful. So if we can push the envelope a little bit further, then we have customers that do everything I just said and more. And we have customers who don't, you know, who barely do progressive profiling because, you know, they don't let us, right? And that's part of being a consultant. If it works out and they have great success, it's because we were great. If they don't, it's because they didn't listen to us, right? That's the typical consultant. Yeah, obviously. Yeah, but that's fine. I mean, and that's just the name of the game.
Yep. I do have a very specific tactical question about landing pages. Have you With HubSpot, is there a way, sometimes, for example, Google, and this is also a story about Wix, it's not just about HubSpot, I don't want to put anyone down, but there is this thing with Google that you can see how quick sites are. I forgot what the bot is called, but you put your link into the site and then you can see the speed of that. I've heard from the grapevine that sometimes landing pages of HubSpot and also Wix and Squarespace and all these, even Elementor using built on WordPress, all these sites that aren't hard-coded are a bit slower on Google and therefore get SEO, gets traffic. Goes down because they are slower the Google bot reads them as slower. Do you have any insights on this or any thoughts on that?
I would, that we could do another podcast with our SEO department. I imagine that there's truth to what you're saying. And not imagine there's truth to it, but SEO is a lot more complicated than just, obviously, we know that it's not just about speed. That's one of the elements. Overall, we've seen is, you know, the quality of the content is the biggest driver of the and that's decided by the readers. But absolutely, the technical elements have to be done properly. And just because it's done on one of those platforms that you just said is not a good enough excuse. Because probably in most cases, people use the template and run and let it go, rather than do the template, run the tool you just said, which shouldn't only just check for speed, but all the other technical elements, and go in and make sure that they get fixed so that you maximize on the speed. Getting a hard-coded website is a bad idea no matter what. It doesn't matter how fast it is, it's a bad idea because the cost of keeping it up is just going to be not worth whatever Google advantage you're going to get. And there's no reason that you can't get a templated, or as if it's templated, but like a, because most of our customers don't have templated websites. They may use Elementor, they use HubSpot, or they may use one of the other ones, but they're designing their own thing, but they have the ability, and most of these platforms, I'm not so familiar with Wix, have an ability to go into behind the scenes and the code to be able to optimize it and fix it. And it's a whole department here at Penguin that deals with that for a portion of our customers on a month-to-month basis.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think I'll have to do that one-on-one SEO podcast with your team. So Perry, this was awesome. It was a lot of fun.
Pleasure.
Got to learn about Salesforce, got to geek out on branding a bit. And HubSpot, and I think there are some things that will remain with me forever. So I'm internally grateful, and I'm hoping that our listeners got as much value as I did from this podcast. And thanks again, Perry.
Thanks for having me.
If people want to find more information about your company, what's the best way or I have questions for you specifically, what's the best way to reach out?
Perry, Perry, at penguinstrategies.com.
All right. Perfect. All right. Well, thanks, Perry. I'm Barry, and have a great day. Bye.